Rosie TV.
I got a really funny voice text from my son, Gabe, the believer. You remember the show I made earlier this week? I was talking about those like Dan Sheridan, who used to say, you have to read your Old Testament every year. He was constantly reading the Old Testament, and I mentioned to you how dangerous that was, because if you're not founded on the grace of God, and you're reading about judgments, and you're reading about the law, and you're reading about all these dire consequences for offending God, it's very dangerous unless you're truly founded on grace. Well, my son Gabe sent me a voice text, and he said, you know, I really like going into the Old Testament, especially in the prophecy department, and he said, I feel like I'm really established in the grace of God. And he says, so it's like I'm being like lowered into the Old Testament. And he gave a sound effect. You know those old diving outfits people used to wear with a metal helmet? He said, it's like I'm going down and I'm breathing. I'm protected by Paul's gospel, and I'm breathing the gospel of grace as I look around into the Old Testament, but I'm protected. And he gave it this sound effect of like, like he's lowered into the Old Testament, but he's breathing the air of grace, and so he's protected, he's safe, but he's touring the old territory. Looking around this foreign land, this foreign the sea of condemnation. It was so funny. I thought you would enjoy that. Well, this is Martin Zender, and happy to be with you at the end of the week. I'm not happy it's the end of the week. I'm happy to be with you. It just happens to be the end of the week. Now, I also got a wonderful email from our sister, Sarah Venus, and this is a shout out to you, Sarah. Thank you, because you gave me the topic of today's show. Sarah said that she used to wonder why people would have to be judged if God is sovereign. If God causes people to do what they do, why does God judge them? And indeed, Paul anticipates this objection, and it's a reasonable question. Paul says, you know, if God is the one in Romans chapter 9 making vessels of honor and dishonor, why is he still blaming the vessels of dishonor? And Sarah wasn't questioning God. Of course, God, she understands, as do you, that God has the right to do whatever he wants with the clay. But the question remains, and Paul really doesn't bother to answer it in Romans chapter 9. But it is answered in Isaiah chapter 10. So here we go, breathing the fresh, beautiful air of Paul. Down we go into Isaiah, but this is one of the greatest sovereignty of God passages. And Sarah said that she came to understand that God judges people for what they believe, and that is so true. And she went on to finish the email by saying, Martin, the only thing that keeps us in peace is knowing the sovereignty of God. And that is a foundational tenet of understanding the deity, of being at peace, not only with your own life, but with the way the world is, knowing that God is in control of all of it. And Jennifer always makes great comments here. Hello, Jennifer. Shout out to you, too. She's always mentioning how great it is. Almost every day, she mentions how great it is to understand that God is in total control. I believe those are her words. Total control of his world, of his universe, and of our lives. And that is information of an invaluable nature. Isaiah chapter 10, talking of the king of Assyria. The king of Assyria in Isaiah chapter 10, by the way, he's not mentioned by name, but it's Sennacherib. It's easier to say the king of Assyria, but I just wanted to note that for you scholars out there. So let's go to Isaiah chapter 10, verse 5. Woe, Assyria, club of my anger, and a rod is he, Sennacherib. rod is he in the day of my indignation against a polluted nation. God's talking about Israel. Against a polluted nation shall I send him, and against a people of my rage shall I commission him. Remember, God judges those he loves. He disciplines those he loves. And this is a time of great discipline for Israel. Against a people of my rage shall I commission him to loot and to plunder, and to make it a tramping ground like the clay of the streets. Here is a key verse in verse 7. Yet he is not planning so. The king of Assyria is not planning, as no thought whatsoever that he is about to be used. Well, he's been used his entire life, but this specific incident is brought out to us as a beautiful picture of the sovereignty of God. He is not planning so. In other words, he's not planning to do what I'm sending him to do. And his heart, it's key, his heart is not devising so. For it is in his heart to exterminate and to cut off nations, not a few. So the heart of the king of Assyria says to its owner, Sennacherib, you know, I'm going to go after these Israelites. I don't like them. They're irritating. I'm going to wipe them off the face of the earth. And he had no clue whatsoever that it was God who put that thought and the ensuing actions into his head. He is not planning to do what God wants. He's not planning, but he is going to do what God wants. Exactly what God wants. And this is not an isolated incident. In Romans 9, Paul makes it clear that God makes vessels of honor and dishonor. All vessels of honor, all vessels of dishonor. This is just a beautiful backstage view of what is happening behind the scenes. Same thing with Pharaoh's heart, Romans 9. Pharaoh did not intend to be fulfilling the will of God. Pharaoh was not intending to provide God a great opportunity for the Exodus, and yet that's exactly what he did. But it was the farthest thing from his mind that he was serving the God of Israel, and indeed our God. For it is in his heart to exterminate and to cut off nations, not a few. That was verse 7 of Isaiah 10. Now we go to verse 12. So it will come to pass. Oh, and everything God designs, ladies and gentlemen, you know this. And this is where our peace comes, as Sarah says. And this is the thing that establishes our hearts, as Jennifer says. So it will come to pass that Yahweh shall complete all his work. All his work. He calls it his work. Even though he's using, as a middleman, the king of Assyria. God shall complete all his work against Mount Zion and Jerusalem. See, this is the object of his affection. A little tough love here. I mean, like, really. Oh, and the king of Assyria would wipe them out completely. But, of course, the king of Assyria, God only wants them as clay in the streets. Yeah, that's not exactly being wiped out. We know Israel is not wiped out. But this is what God says in verse 12. Via Isaiah the prophet. Then I shall visit evil on the fruit of the insolent heart of the king of Assyria, and on the vaunting haughtiness of his eyes. And that's just what Sarah said in the email. That the king of Assyria and anybody appearing at the great white throne who has been a vessel of dishonor will be judged according to what they were thinking. Irrespective of how they were thinking it. Yes, we know that God himself gave them their thoughts. It's very evident here. God is using the king of Assyria. He gave him his thoughts, put the plans in his head. The king of Assyria completely unaware of it. And yet for his good, and this is the key to the judgments of God. They are always for the benefit of those being judged, for the benefit. They come face to face with what they were thinking. It's all relative, isn't it? It's in relation to what they were thinking concerning themselves. That's the only way God can judge people. as I've said before, God has a problem, is that he's doing everything. He's accomplishing everything. That's his, quote, problem, unquote. So how do you judge people in that case? You just do it. You judge them not according to what you are doing with them, because if you look at it from the absolute perspective, these people are completely innocent because they're doing the will of God. So you have to see this from a relative perspective. They're being judged for what they thought. And the results are relative also. They come to a realization of the truth of how they were being used by God. And God has to do this because what do you think he's going to do? Trust people to do what he wants them to do? No, he is dictating every single event of every single person that ever lived on this earth. I shall visit evil on the fruit of the insolent heart of the king of Assyria and on the vaunting haughtiness of his eyes. For he has said, verse 13, by the vigor of my hand I did it. As I read this next verse, tell me if this is not the perfect description of human free will. Every Christian is guilty of the following. For he has said, and think of this. In this example, the king of Assyria is speaking of, God is speaking concerning him about his plans against Israel. But in the Christian case, it is their illusion, their delusion, that they are the ones that chose Christ. They are the faithful ones. They were faithful of their own free will. They were not influenced whatsoever. And the reason they're going to be in glory and the rest of the world is going to be in hell is because of their decision. If this isn't, verse 13, Isaiah 10, if this isn't the most picturesque description of the thoughts in the mind of the Christians, I don't know what is. For he has said, by the vigor of my hand, I did it. And by my wisdom, for I have understanding. Let me read that again. For he has said, by the vigor of my hand, I did it. And by my wisdom. This is the Christian creed. My wisdom. For I have understanding. The rest of you losers have no understanding of God. And because of that, God has no choice but to send you to hell. But he has no choice but to send me to heaven because I have wisdom. I have understanding. And by the vigor of my hand, I did it. The rest of verse 13. So I am taking away the boundaries of peoples, and their equippings have I robbed. And I am bringing down those who sit like a sturdy one. This is the king of Assyria now going on to his specific situation. But wow, there it is. And what does God say about this situation? What does God say? What will God say at the great white throne to the Christians who believe that it was by their wisdom, by their understanding, that they obtained God? He will say to them what he said and what he says in verse 15 of Isaiah chapter 10 of the king of Assyria, and it's this. Shall the axe vaunt itself over the one hewing with it? This is Romans chapter 9, come to Isaiah chapter 10. It's right here. Shall the axe vaunt itself over the one hewing with it? In Romans 9, this reads, shall the clay magnify itself above the hands of the potter? Should the mace magnify itself over the one swinging it? And now we get some satire here from God. Verse 15, Isaiah 10, as if a club should swing the one raising it up. What the hell kind of freaky world would that be? A club is raising the person who's holding it? That is how insane free will is. The people claiming to be making independent decisions that earn them the right to go to heaven because of their wisdom. It is as foolish and as insane as saying that the clay is the thing manipulating the potter. It's the clay that's making the potter do what he's doing. It's the axe that is actually swinging the man. It is the human, in accord with the teaching of free will, this is what they say. It's the human who is manipulating God. Oh my goodness, talk about an arrogant heart. Talk about God needing to visit evil, and evil just breaking down. That's what it means to break. Evil, ra in the Hebrew, to break. I shall visit breakage on the fruit of the insolent heart. And every single Christian, every single believer in human free will have this hour at the great white throne when they will be broken and they will see that their hearts were insolent and their eyes were haughty. As if a club should swing the one raising it up. As if a rod should raise him up who is not wood. The club is wood. The clay. Clay is a nice word for mud. And in fact, the Greek word pelos, translated clay in the Concordant version in Romans 9, is literally, if you look at the key word concordance, mud. Is the mud going to lift the hand of the potter? Verse 16, therefore the Lord Yahweh of hosts shall send leanness upon his stout warriors, and instead of his glory shall glow a glowing like the glowing of fire, and the light of Israel will become a fire, and his Holy One a blaze, and it will consume and devour his spines and his buckthorn in one day. The spines, the vaunted will, the spine, the determination of the human, believing the lie that the clay manipulates the potter or the axe manipulates the one using it. And so the judgment will come at the great white throne for all these people. And again, the issue is not, but God, you made me that way. That's not the issue at all. The issue is God made these people the way they are for us, for our sakes. Just as he hardened Israel's heart to make way for a message to go to the nations, likewise he has hardened the hearts of all these free will people, hardened their hearts so that we might have a contrast, so that we might be able to appreciate God's making of us into vessels of honor. We are not coming into judgment. These people are. And we need to thank God every day that he has enlightened us and taught us to see that he's the potter. He's the one who wields humanity according to his will. And we need to thank God, and I know we do, thank God that he has made us into vessels of honor who recognize his sovereign will.